again, and welcome to Musings on Sports, where great storytelling is what we do. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my good friend and co-host, Bob Bupka. Bob, it's the first show of December 2022. Plenty to talk about once again, and a guest who is absolutely fascinating in Bo Welling, who has done a lot of design work, golf course design work for Tiger Woods, and he is the new president of the World Curling Federation. What a combination that is, Bob.
Yeah, I wonder how Tiger is at curling. We'll have to ask him the next time we see him. But you're right, that is a unique combination, to say the least. And I know our listeners on Musings are going to really enjoy listening to Bo Welling.
Yeah, he's done a lot of things in his life. A South Carolina boy who became big into curling for some reason. You're going to hear all about that. But Bo has studied Irish drama in Ireland. He's just a well-rounded and quite the fascinating individual. Hey, Bob, I've got a big trip coming up this week. A good friend of mine, Sean Walker, who's chief technical officer for the Phillies, reached out to me about 10 days ago, and he said, dude, come on up to the Army-Navy game. And I said, yeah, let's do it. So I'm flying up with my son Ryan on Friday morning to Philadelphia. Going to be there for what amounts to almost three full days, and cannot wait to see all of the pageantry of the Army-Navy football game. Like you, Bob, I've been fortunate to do a lot of really cool sports-related things in my life, but this one is right at the very top of the bucket list, and I'm sure, as with a lot of people who will be in attendance, it'll be a very emotional moment to see the march on with both the Army and Navy, and then to see the game, but everything associated with it, Bob, a spectacular event.
Well, we're going to give you the assignment for all of the listeners of Musings, myself included, that has never had the opportunity to attend a Army-Navy game. Kelly, we're placing that responsibility on your shoulders. That's one of the great, great events that happen in America only once a year. And I'm so happy for you that this year you're going to be there in attendance. And the one thing that you said that made it even more special, you're going to be there with your son. It's one thing to go do something that's really special, but if you get to do it with one of your sons, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it just takes it to another level, doesn't it? I mean, a lot of the work that you and I have done through the years, it's been that. It's been fun. It's been work, and it's been, for me at least, and when I worked at the PGA for many years, it was a job, and I was there, and I wasn't able to share that with my kids. Now to be able to have my son, who's 22 and just a fantastic young man, go along with me and have that bonding over those couple of days will be fantastic. And frankly, I could care less who wins. I just want to be a part of it. Hey, look, and I'm going to a city, Bob, where, man, the sports gods continue to shine on the city of Philadelphia. The Eagles absolutely demolished a pretty good Tennessee Titans team on Sunday, 11-1, best record in the NFL. They go to play the New York Giants this coming Sunday. But they look really good, hitting on all cylinders. They lost to Washington a few weeks back. They've rebounded from it. And the San Francisco 49ers, a team that I think a lot of folks felt could really give them a run. I mean, just a major blow with Jimmy Garoppolo suffering a broken foot last Sunday, out for the year. They're relying on a guy named Brock Purdy, who's going to give everything he can to it. They may even sign Baker Mayfield, who's just released by the Carolina Panthers, but Philadelphia is in great shape. And then on top of that, on the baseball side, having come so close to winning the World Series and just signing Trey Turner, my former Washington National, to an 11-year, $300 million deal, the Phillies are all in, as the Eagles are. By the way, Bob, and you can relate to this, six on the Phillies roster currently will make at least $20 million next year. That's Bob Bupka money range right there.
Well, I thought you were talking about the employees of LIV when you said $20 million, but I'm sure they're not too far behind.
I don't think they are, based on the money that Dustin Johnson to some of those guys one this year. Bob, I know you've already looked at the early lines at the for the college football playoffs. A couple of really interesting games with number one Georgia taking on number four Ohio State and number two Michigan taking on number three TCU. Those games will be played on New Year's Eve. I expect Georgia to beat Ohio State, and I expect Michigan to beat TCU, but that's why they play the games. And wouldn't it be fascinating if Ohio State and Michigan, easily the biggest regular season matchup in college football, if those two somehow faced each other for the national championship? It could happen.
Yeah, it could happen. And boy, what a game that would be. You got to give credit to Michigan. They're firing on all cylinders. Ohio State didn't get the job done against Michigan, but they're going to get another opportunity, and I think that's going to be an exciting game.
Well, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how it all plays out, Bob, as I mentioned, on New Year's Eve. This coming Saturday, though, we've got the Heisman Trophy presentation in New York City. Caleb Williams, the quarterback at USC, just a sophomore, by the way, is the favorite and likely will win if you look at the body of work for the entire season. Stetson Bennett, the quarterback at Georgia, all he's done, they won the national championship last year. All he's done is had a terrific season, and they're still the number one team in the nation. I think he's got to get some votes. And this Max Duggan of TCU, the heart and soul that he poured into all these runs and scrambles at the end of the Big 12 championship game. Yeah, they lost in overtime to Kansas State, but Max Duggan is going to take some votes away from Caleb Williams at all. But I do think Williams, who has tremendous pro potential, I think Caleb Williams will win the Heisman on Saturday.
Well, I'm going to be rooting for Max Duggan, but according to all indications, it looks like you're going to be right. Caleb Williams, outstanding in every aspect of playing quarterback.
Yeah, no question. I want to touch for a minute on Deion Sanders taking the job at University of Colorado. I thought what he said at his opening press conference was brutally honest. I thought it was classic Coach Prime. I think that a program like Colorado has hired him for a reason. They have been, you talk about down in the dumps. This is a program that used to be really good, but hasn't been for the better part of a decade. He made it pretty clear that he's, you know, there are going to be kids that are on that team now that he said, you guys should look at the portal, the transfer portal, because they're not going to be on the team next year. He's going to get kids who are going to want to play for him. He's already got a guy named Sean Lewis, who was the head coach at Kent State, has taken the job as Deion's offensive coordinator at Colorado, runs a very exciting type of offense, a big-time recruiter. People will gravitate towards Deion Sanders. That program at Colorado should be good, and under him and the way that college football is set up now, it can be turned around and be successful quickly. I think he's going to do a fantastic job at Colorado.
And I'm sure there's a big smile on the face of Hale Irwin. That's right, the golfer Hale Irwin that played football at the University of Colorado. So he's all excited about primetime coming and taking over. I like primetime style. He's a winner inside and out, and I think he'll spread some of that winning magic at the University of Colorado. What a story that's going to be.
Yeah, it is. And you also remember you've got UCLA and USC are going to be leaving the Pac-12, and it opens up an opportunity for Colorado, which has languished there in the Pac-12 for a number of years now, as I mentioned, to not only gain a foothold, but maybe take over and be the dominant program with those two big ones leaving. Hey, before we get to our buddy Bo Welling as the guest, a gentleman named Nick Bollettieri, who literally was a tennis legend. It's the only way to say it. He wasn't an instructor. He wasn't somebody who worked with kids. This was a legendary figure in the game of tennis. Died after a long, wonderful life at 91. He founded the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida, which has now flourished with other sports. He taught the Williams sisters, Andre Agassi, Boris Becker, Monica Seles. Nick Bollettieri really was as influential a figure in tennis, in the development of so many players as anyone over the past, 40, 50 years.
Yeah, what a career, what a life. I've never met him in person, but I've talked to a lot of people that did, and they said he is just a first-class gentleman with a overwhelming amount of knowledge on how to play the game of tennis.
Yeah, he'll be missed for sure. We send along regrets and condolences to all those who've been touched by Nick Bollettieri. Bo Welling will join us in just a minute. You're going to be fascinated by his stories about Tiger Woods and about curling. Very, very interesting guy. And you'll hear all of those stories from Bo Welling right after this from our good friends at Bridgestone Golf.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover, the smarter tour ball.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Bob, the world of golf is fortunate to have so many talented designers who have created the great golf courses we enjoy playing. Our guest today is certainly one of them, as he is a senior design consultant for TGR Design. That's Tiger Woods' company, while also serving as the president of the World Curling Federation. You heard that right. What a treat to be joined by a man of many interests and pursuits. He's the founder and chief executive officer of Bo Welling Design. Bo Welling, welcome to Musings on Sports. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you, Kelly and Bob. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, Bo, I'm going to share a story with you about Tiger Woods, because there's been so many stories, as you well know, over the years, but this one shines a very positive light on Tiger. And he had his event, you know, at Sherwood out in California for many years. Janice and I used to cover that event. One year I couldn't make it. I was in the hospital back in New York just for some routine test. Well, Tiger sees Janice and says, "Where's Bob?" Janice said, "Well, he's in the hospital, but it's routine test. He's fine." Tiger said, "Get him on the phone." So I'm laying in my hospital bed in Southampton. The phone rings. I said, "Hello." He said, "How you doing, man?" I said, "Who's this?" He said, "How you doing, man?" I said, "Who the hell is this?" He said, "It's Tiger." I said, "Oh, Tiger, golly, you trying to give me a heart attack?" He said, "No, Bob, just want to make sure you're okay." I said, "Man, I appreciate the call. I'm doing fine." I hang up. There's a nurse there. I said, "Well, I was Tiger Woods on the phone." She says, "What?" I said, "Tiger Woods." She leaves the room, Bo, and within a minute comes back in with a doctor. Doctor said, "Mr. Bubka, the nurse thinks you might be delusional. We're going to have to check you over."
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one, Bob. Thank you for sharing that.
I've been at all 15 of Tiger's majors, so we've been around for a long time.
Awesome. Very good.
Hey, Bo, we talked about your various interests up front. You studied Irish drama in Dublin, and you were a successful investment banker and international banker. This was even before you got going into golf course design. Is that right?
That is right. I've kind of lived a kind of crazy Forrest Gump lifestyle of bouncing all over and being in various and sundry interesting spots. But it's been, you know, life's about the journey and not the destination. So I'm very much have enjoyed it. I do have a very great sort of diversity of interests. I absolutely love learning and always have. And I think that's sort of taken me down all these sort of different paths. And, you know, but having said that, golf has been a big part of my life since I was 2 years old. I've got pictures of my dad teaching me to play golf with sawed off clubs at age two. And I just turned 52, so I've been in this, you know, been around this game for over 50 years now, and I think I've realized that I'm not going to get any better. I've certainly peaked, but it's been a great orientation to life, and great teacher of life and life skills, and and created so many great relationships for me along this sort of adventurous journey that I'm just so thankful that I've had this as a big part of me for such a long time.
Well, I'm sure one of those great relationships had to be with Tom Fazio. How'd you get started with the great golf course designer Fazio? And what was it like working for him for 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, Tom is a wonderful human being in addition to an incredible golf course designer. So I feel very fortunate that my path crossed for such a long time. I grew up a golfer and was a kid that doodled golf holes. But it wasn't really until college that I had this idea that maybe I wanted to pursue golf course design. And I went to Brown University, which is sort of this wacky, weird place where grades are optional and the students are empowered to sort of create their own course of study. And I was sort of debating, do I do physics or science or do I do art? That's how coherent I was. And I literally woke up one morning with this epiphany of like, wait a minute, golf course design, that's sort of engineering and technical, but artistic and creative. And I played on the NCAA powerhouse Brown Bear golf team. And right across the street was the Rhode Island School of Design, and they had landscape architecture. And then to answer your question, Tom Fazio was building a golf course in my hometown of Greenville, South Carolina at the same time. And my father was involved on the development side of the project. And so I started calling Tom and asking him, how does one become a golf course designer? And he basically had to answer my phone call because I was a son of a client, if you will. And so that ultimately led to me going to work with him. And I think he did that, you know, primarily just to get me to quit calling him, just to, you know, if you're that interested, just show up. So in any event, I did that throughout college and worked there. And then ultimately, you know, went on this other path of, you know, finance and investment banking, international banking, but ultimately Tom sort of lured me back into golf and had the real pleasure of learning from him and assisting with his efforts, you know, for over a decade. And it was really wonderful, formative time for me, both as a design person, but also I think just as a person. You know, I feel like, you know, how he values relationships and how he looks at things is really, really special. And he's just a very kind-hearted soul, and it just really feel like I benefited from my time with him. Absolutely.
Well, that's terrific. We're delighted to be joined by Bo Welling here on Musings on Sports. So, Bo, 10 years with Tom Fazio, and you've had an ongoing relationship in the design business with Tiger. How did that relationship start with Tiger Woods, and what are your responsibilities with him, and what are some of the courses that you've helped design that bear his name?
So while I still was working with Tom Fazio, I met Greg McLaughlin, who was running the Tiger Woods Foundation, and developed a relationship and friendship with him. And that ultimately led to us helping the Tiger Woods Foundation with the golf elements at the Tiger Woods Learning Center outside of Anaheim, California. And kind of through that, I got to know Tiger a little bit. And so when he decided to put his toe in the water in terms of golf course design, he reached out to me to ask some opinions about how I thought he might go about doing it. And I tried to, give him my sort of honest opinion. And that ultimately led to, you know, me trying to help him a little bit more as he thought about it. And it happened to be that I ended up deciding to leave Tom and start my own company, which you pointed out is very creatively called Bo Welling Design. And so Tiger in many ways became my first client or one of my first clients. And so we've had an ongoing consulting relationship of assisting his design company, TGR Design, really since its inception. And, you know, very much appreciate the opportunity there. I think, you know, everything that we do at our company is very client focused, very much trying to help our clients achieve their goals and objectives. And TGR is no different. So we value that relationship and have been fortunate to help him at Blue Jack National, which we think you mentioned earlier, and El Cardinal and Diamante at Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, Payne's Valley at Big Cedar Lodge in Branson, Missouri, and so in some other places. So it's all been a great situation for us, and certainly value that friendship and that relationship.
You said early on to that last answer that you gave him your honest opinion when he reached out to you in terms of your thoughts for him as a designer. What did you tell him?
I basically told him that I didn't tell him anything. I what I suggested was, you know, focus on building meaningful, you know, quality projects and really good golf, and let that be sort of the driving factor. And I think he appreciated that. And I think what he was particularly interested in was he was very cognizant of not wanting to design overly difficult golf courses. He's, and I think, you know, he even said, you know, I think I know how to build something that's really hard, but how do I, you know, how do I build something that's fun and playable and really enjoyable for all? And so I was impressed by that, you know, given he was best player in the world, and he very much wanted to be a big tent person, if you will, in terms of catering his design efforts to everybody. So that was sort of the basis of the conversation.
Okay, let's get to it. You're a guy born and raised in South Carolina, the Palmetto State, and today you're the president of the World Curling Federation, certainly a sport associated with Canada and the colder climates in the United States. How did this whole saga come to be with the kid from South Carolina getting involved at some point in curling and then all the way to the top of the association? How?
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy story that some people want to make into a movie. But the shorter answer is I got fascinated watching it on television, and I'd never heard of it. And I was like, how can this be in the Olympics? This is crazy. And again, being the person that's very thirsty for knowledge and wanting to learn, I set about trying to learn and understand it more. And even though it's, obviously very popular in Canada, it's actually an ancient Scottish sport. And so just like golf. And so in fact, golf and curling sort of emanated at about the same time. And to this day, it's very obvious to me that golf and curling come out of the same sort of Scottish ether, if you will. Like, angles are very important in both sports. They both are built around values and honor and integrity. They both have a huge camaraderie piece to them. They have weird jargon, and arguably they might both be excuses to drink scotch. But I think being a lifelong golf person, I think the more I learned about curling, I understood it sort of conceptually very early on. And that ultimately led me to want to go see this in person. And so I went to Bemidji, Minnesota to a U.S. National Championships right after the Torino Winter Olympics. And I think everybody was so surprised that this guy from South Carolina would show up in northern Minnesota to look at, watch curling. It kind of took me in. And it just so happened to be about that same time the USOPC was advising USA Curling to get somebody on their board as an independent director to offer an outside sort of perspective. And so they ultimately asked me to do that. And so I served on the board of USA Curling for over a decade, and along the way got very involved with the World Curling Federation, which is the international federation, the partner of the IOC for the delivery of curling at the Olympics. And I became a representative from the United States to the WCF. And then ultimately in 2018 was elected to the board at the WCF. And then just a couple of months ago was elected to the presidency. So it's quite a crazy, again, Forrest Gump type story of watching on television in Greenville, South Carolina, and ended up getting elected to the presidency at the, right outside the doors of the IOC in Lausanne, Switzerland a few weeks ago. But I very much value the people. It's like the sport attracted me initially. But what I got super fascinated on is really the people and the community around it. And I've been quoted many times saying that if the world had more curlers, I think the world would be a better place. And it's a real family of people. It's really, really special. And I view this new role as quite an honor, as well as an incredible amount of responsibility. And so I'm working very hard to hopefully, help the sport advance and help this community of people advance. And, when I reflect on how crazy this all sounds, I look at my career in golf, and I got involved in golf design because I was a golfer, and it was sort of greens, tees, bunkers, the test of the game. But along the way, what I got more fascinated about with golf is that golf also creates community and promotes human relationships. And so that's very much what we're into from a golf design standpoint is we're very much into how can golf be used to help promote community and sort of help advance these human moments. And so when I step back and hover up and look at this craziness that I'm involved at high levels of golf and now high levels of curling, that's really sort of the common thread. And it really relates to you know, games of honor and integrity that are promoting values and helping people come together in a very human sort of way.
Well, let me drag you back into the golf world, Bo. I've heard nothing but positive comments about the work you're doing for the PGA of America at the PGA's new home headquarters in Frisco, Texas. I hear it's really going to be a jewel.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. And, you know, it's the PGA of America has relocated their headquarters to the campus. And right now there's a 540-room Omni resort under construction, and that'll all get done, and everything should open up in May. And so what it consists of, in addition to the headquarters and the Omni, it's two championship golf courses. So the East Course, designed by Gil Hance, will host all the big, larger spectator events. And the PGA's already committed 20-some-odd championships to the facility. The West Course is the course that we designed. They'll also, it's championship level, but you know, we'll hold less spectator-intensive events. There's a short course that Gil and us collaborated on. You know, it's 30, 40 acres of practice, two-acre putting green, incredible amount of golf retail. And so oriented retail and some golf gamification. And so it's almost this village-type component around the practice and short course and putting experiences. And so it's really, really going to be special. And I think the world's going to know everything about PGA Frisco because these championships are going to put it on the map. And, you know, the first one is the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship next May. Mm-hmm. But I think long term with the PGA relocating their home here, and it being in the middle of the country with, you know, incredible airlift into DFW, the 29,000 members of the PGA of America are all going to be able to get to here very easily. And sort of the innovation, the programming, and the education that's going to happen at PGA Frisco, I think all that's going to, the professionals are going to take that back to their clubs and their countries kind of all around the country. And so I think the sort of network effect, the halo effect of what's going to happen at PGA Frisco is going to have a wide-ranging impact on the game of golf really throughout the country. And so I'm just so super excited about it. I mean, for us to be able to be involved in this has been really special, and just incredibly honored. And we actually serve as the master planner of the whole campus, mm-hmm. in addition to designing the golf design elements. And so it's really, really spectacular. And people are starting to get tours, and there's been a little bit of preview play, and you know, all the feedback has just been super positive. But I'm super excited about May 1st when everything opens and getting folks out there. Gil has been quoted as calling it the future home of American golf, you know, and there's almost a St. Andrews-esque sort of village feel to how this, all this is put together. Seth Wall, CEO of PGA of America, has talked about it being the Silicon Valley of golf due to this innovation they expect to happen there. So I think it's going to be extraordinarily impactful, and just super, super excited to be affiliated with it. I'm actually talking to you from an Omni hotel in downtown Dallas, and the Rolling family who owns Omni have been the big sponsor of all of this, and their passion for Bob and Blake's passion for golf is pretty infectious. And to sort of to see all this come together and, you know, in Texas and in a big way, because everything's big in Texas, is it's pretty awesome.
Hey Bo, I watched a little bit of a video on your company website, and you talked pretty honestly about having your team actually disagreeing quite a bit, but you said that that's almost by design. I wonder what does that mean in your line of business, and why does that approach work for you and your company?
I think I'm just a big believer in diversity and diversity of thought and diversity of opinion. And I think, you know, when I say we disagree, it's like we test each other and, you know, and we debate it things out, and I think it helps us to make bigger, richer, you know, better decisions. You know, I think when I say that, it makes it sound like it's an argument. It's not that. And we're a collaborative team, and we're extraordinarily collaborative with our clients and our stakeholders. And I think when you have these big scale projects, you know, that have all these different viewpoints, you know, to be able to have that kind of orientation, where you're intellectually honest and you're able to work through issues and have debate and discussion, I think that's positive. You know, I think what's happening too often in this country is, you know, there is no debate because the country's polarized into you know, two sides, whatever those sides may be. It's very, things are too binary. And I think what we try to do is we think debate is good because that leads to ultimately to better decisions. And so, you know, you have to be respectful and those kinds of things, which we all are. But, I'm super proud of our team. We've got great individuals on it and everybody's passionate about what we're doing. And so it certainly works for us. And, flipping back to curling, I mean, one of the reasons I'm into the role I am is that I think I've led a very collaborative process in the World Curling Federation of trying to bring in diversity of opinion from our different member associations around the globe. And they're, you know, Canada's really big, Scotland's really big, but you've got Nigeria or Guyana or Slovenia that are maybe not so big. And so to be able to have those kind of discussions and see things through everybody's viewpoint, I think that's the way you deal most effectively in a multi-stakeholder environment. And if I were to flip back to golf again, you know, PGA Frisco had a lot of stakeholders in it. You had, again, Omni, you had PGA of America, you had the city of Frisco, you had the North Texas PGA section, you had all these different goals and objectives in the Frisco Independent School District. And so all of us to be able to work collectively and come up with something that I think is going to be perceived as really remarkable, world class. It's the way we like to work, and so it has worked for us, and look forward to continue to work that way.
I'm going to let Kelly play the 18th hole with you, Bo, but from me, thank you for doing this. It was not only entertaining, it was very educational. I can't wait to get to Frisco to see that facility. I know everybody at the PGA of America is over the moon about it, and now talking to you, I get a little better understanding as to why that is so.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Yeah, the only follow-up I have before we close, and Bo, you and I talked about this a while back before we were doing this podcast, but you've got to tell the story about the extended stay that you had at when you first met with the curling folks, and you talk a lot about community, but you got to know those people a lot more, a lot better than you ever thought possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just sort of went up as a fan, and at the time I had an assistant and named Grace, who's from North Georgia, and she kind of called up to try to help me get a ticket, and because we weren't sure like if it was sold out or not sold out, and she has a little bit thicker accent than I do, and at some point someone up there, you know, asked where she was calling from, and she said, well, I'm calling from North Carolina, because that's where the Fazio office was. And the guy remarked, well, why in the world is somebody from North Carolina interested in curling? And she responded factually that, oh, well, he's not from North Carolina. He's from South Carolina, because that's where I live, across the border in South Carolina. And so
that made it better.
Chuckled. Yeah. And you know, that explained it all, right? And but so anyway, when I showed up, like I think they were all waiting to see who was this nut job from South Carolina that would come up. So it's almost like I was more known before I showed up, but it had nothing to do with my relationship in golf or, you know, who I am. It was just literally that I was from South Carolina. And so one of the very first persons that I ran into when I got there was Pete Fenson, who was the skip or the captain of the U.S. men's Olympic team that 2 weeks prior had won the bronze medal in Torino. And I introduced myself to him and congratulated him on his success in Torino. And he thanked me. And I said, you know, I'm real excited to be here from South Carolina. And as soon as he said that, he's like, oh my goodness, you're Bo Welling. You're here. And I'm looking around like, how in the world does this guy know? He's like, yeah. He's like, we thought you changed your mind because you weren't here on Saturday. And you have no idea. Like, the town's excited, the club's excited. This is just so awesome that you're here. And so I was looking around like, am I on a hidden camera television show? Like, what in the world is going on? But like, everybody was like, so excited that this guy from South Carolina was coming. And so, you know, when I went, I didn't know if I was going to stay for like, you know, a few hours or a day. And I was just so fascinated by all of this. I ended up staying 9 days. And so I was like the celebrity. It came out and said I was the celebrity because everyone I'd go in the town, like, oh my God, you're the South guy from South Carolina. And, you know, people were taking me to dinners, taking me out drinking. I had a birthday while I was there. The town threw me a birthday party. It was just this whole unbelievable experience. And at the very end, I get it, you know, recognized by the chair of USA Curling. I get a standing ovation from all the people at the national championships that I'm there. He names me the official Southern ambassador to the sport of curling, and that was funny and whatever. But the Olympians came up to me afterwards and said, "Oh, you're the ambassador now. You got to stay one more day and walk with us in the Welcome Home U.S. Curler Parade, which is going to start at the Paul Bunyan statue right downtown." And so I ended up doing that. And so the movie that people want to make, it's very much at this angle of sort of, you know, this, you know, foreign man in a foreign land kind of thing. But what I appreciated about the people is that they were so welcoming and just so excited about not just their sport, but about the town, about their friendships, the relationships they had, the sort of, you know, this curling community. And it was great, you know. And I, you know, when I got elected president, you know, a couple of months ago, you know, John Schuster, the skip of the United States men's team that won the gold medal in 2018, he immediately tweets out, you know, I met Bo back in Bemidji in 2006, and he's been a great supporter and fan of ours, and it's just been wonderful. And I look back at that and I think, you know, this is crazy. You know, I discovered the sport when I was 18 years old because it was a demonstration sport in the Calgary Winter Olympics, and I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And so the fact that, you know, I've ended up where I have is people say, oh, it's a testament to me. It's not really a testament to me. It's really a testament, I think, to these people and this community of people and how special and wonderful they are. And that's kind of why I say, I think if the world had more curlers, the world would be a better place, because it's there's a lot of good stuff going on in the curling world.
Hey, before we close with you, Bo, in terms of your prowess, are you a better curler or are you a better golfer?
Well, right now, as busy I am, I'm probably good at neither. I like to say that I'm an 18 handicap curler would be. I can curl well enough to not embarrass myself, but I'm certainly extraordinarily far from an elite level curler. And my golf game seems like it's getting worse and worse. So they're probably about to be on parity if the way my golf performance is trending these days. So that's how I would answer that.
Hey, it's been a lot of fun. Bo Welling Design, thank you so much for joining us here on Musings on Sports. Best of luck in all the future endeavors, both on the golf course and on the sheet of ice in curling. Thanks, Bo.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Well, we thank Bo Welling for his time and terrific stories. Thank you all for listening to Musings on Sports. For my good friend Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off, Musings on Sports.